And I'm going on only to read this paper, and I'm apologizing all these language faults with you. My preposition where should be two, there is four, or something like that. But dear listeners, the famous failure definition of man, which goes back to Plato's statesman, suggests that man is an unfederate biped. If us humans are to be defined by what we are not, why then it is feathers and not wings which are lacking? Why not man is a wingless biped? After the quadrupeds and bipeds are separated, the discussions of the statesman notice that the class of two-footed animals include only men and birds, and the unsafe supposition is that the winged refers only to the birds. However, the Greek word for winged, which Plato in this passage used, comes from the word fly, and can be translated more accurately as flyer. It was used of all flying animals, birds, bats, bees, gnats, and other flying insects. Aristotle, for his part, carefully differentiates kinds of winged creatures or flyers by noting that some have membranous wings, some dermatous wings like bats, some seated wings like beetles, and some have federate wings, for which occurred a special word, pterota. Although Aristotle and Plato mentioned the two-footedness of birds and humans, he noticed also other affinities, like the ability of certain birds to utter articulate sounds, and the many instances of ingenuity and cleverness which birds show in their living, like swallows with their excellent skill in nest building. So that birds is like a par excellent of this cleverness of animals for Aristotle, in Aristotle's History of Animals. And in all these discussions success a certain kind of felt affinity between birds and human beings. And birds surely have a special place in the everyday animal categories of ancient Greece, resulting from their significance as dignitary animals, the background of which was the conception that the Olympian gods revealed their will to humans through birds. In order to foretell future events, humans had to observe the flight, chattering, singing, and feeding of birds as the signs of gods. Birds were equated to omens in such an extent that the word, Greek word bird, ornis, meant also omen. Certain birds were associated with seasons and weather due to the annual migration connected with seasonal change. Some birds were dedicated to the gods, like the eagle to Zeus, and some were thought to have magical powers or medical value. Birds were kept as pets, and certain birds, like pigeons and doves, were favorite love gifts. But then the Greek mythology also knew man-eating birds, and the Greek fowling practices are incredibly tortuous, reckoning with the reverent status of birds as the omens and the emblems of gods. In the following, I shall present some attitudes to birds, which are expressed in Aristophanes' famous birds. Before that, I shall outline the basic plot of this complicated masterpiece of old Attic comedy, which was first produced at the Dionysus Theatre on the southern slope of Acropolis, Athens, in 411 BC. The title of the comedy points to the chorus of birds whose species, 24 in all, are named when the chorus arrives on the stage. There is two elderly Athenians, Peisetheros and his companion Eurypides, who are seeking a better place than Athens to live. They are tired of its eternal lawsuits and sycophants. Climbing across a hillside wilderness, they are holding in their hands a crow and a jackdaw, which refer to an ancient religious practice to use birds and other animals as guides during journeys, and especially while seeking a new settlement. In the first place, they are traveling to ask help from Tereus, who was a man but was then transformed into a bird, a hoo-hoo. As a bird, Tereus has reached and seen much more countries than human beings ever can. After talking to Tereus, it comes clear for Peisetheros, who is the protagonist of this comedy, that the ideal place has been found, namely the realm of the birds, the sky, although it needs adjustment and fixing. Peisetheros' utopian plans are eventually accomplished, but he and his companion had to confront some setbacks, like in the first place the bird army. Peisetheros managed to appease these angry birds by proving that birds were the former kings and rulers of the world, and that he would help them to restore their power. He even urged birds to challenge the Olympian gods by building their own polis, a walled city-state, that is the cloud cuckoo land, between the earth and upper heaven. It will, as a blockade, prevent the sacrificial smoke or steam, the delicacy of gods, to reach the realm of the gods, the upper heaven. The city wall is guarded so that the goddess Iris, the rainbow, is arrested while trying to fly from heaven to earth. Peisetheros and Eurypides are able to grow feathers and wings by eating a magic root. Also other Athenians find out this new utopia, and real ornithomania, that is a bird frenzy, seizes Athens. Soon new settlers are applying to be the citizens of the cloud cuckoo land and asking for wings. However, the war between the birds and the gods is hanging over. Then the gods send an envoy, and the relationship between gods and birds are reconciled. Peisetheros, who is now recognized along with birds as god to humans, has also become the ruler of the gods. Although Aristophanes' birds has plenty of topical, political and satirical content, it is also a treasure book for the Greek attitudes of birds. I shall concentrate only on two. Firstly, to the ambivalence of attitudes that birds were seen as revered divine or semi-divine beings, but also as flighty, half-wit, sometimes fearsome creatures. Secondly, the second point of view, because the chorus of birds has an important role in the play, the bird's point of view is as if included. The world is not seen only in the interest of humans. The divinity of birds is of course lightened up with comic twist, and it is elaborated to its utmost in this comedy, especially the way how the birds acquire their new identity as gods. Alan H. Somerstein has compared the play with George Orwell's Animal Farm, and suggested that the true winners of the new order are not the birds, but humans, as Peisetheros argues to his companion. The birds are much easier and cheaper gods to worship than the Olympians. However, if the top position of the birds is a sham, the birds also benefit from their new status. Moreover, if Peisetheros' long argumentation supporting the old sovereignty of birds is only a way of persuasion, there is also the bird cosmogony presented by the chorus of birds. This elaborate chorus song, which bears traces of an Orphic cosmogony, begins truly up over. In the beginning was a cosmic egg from which the god Eros was born, and Eros from his part gave birth to birds. Naturally, also this is comical, especially if we imagine these proud birds presented with the comic bird costumes and funny masks at the stage. Aristophanes loves to make contrast between the mythical loftiness and the mundane, ordinary life, so that the highfalutin and pretentious tenor of the previous stanza can be dropped to the ground in the next. However, although it is comical that, of course, birds' cosmogony would begin with an egg, it also expressed the philosophical notion that details of one's religion are always based on one's images and experiences. Moreover, not only birds, but also the Olympian gods are made fun of in this comedy. The ear, the abode and element of birds connects birds to the gods. Besides the new city in the sky, many different kinds of bird habitats are mentioned, especially the rocky wilderness, the home of Pan and Mountain Mother, the Great Mother, a place where the human rules are and laws do not apply. References to the blissful life of the birds in the wilderness, apart from human settlements, can be viewed as primitivism, nostalgic longing for simple, frugal but happy life, which is a constant topic in Aristophanes' comedies. But then the chorus describes the wilderness as a source of creativity, music and song. The beauty of Nightingale's song is said to impress both gods and natural forces. Thus, when the chorus praises the power of the music of the birds, the tone seems to be genuinely serious. The old Attic comedy always included the so-called paravases, longest chorus songs in which the chorus directly addresses the audience. In the first paravases in the birds, the chorus of birds prompts the audience to come to the cloud cuckoo land, presenting the benefit of wings, but from the trivial point of view of theater goers only. However, the potency of wings is noted also more seriously. Wingedness points to the effective velocity, and Greek has plenty of phrases with the adjective winged, like winged birds, winged arrows, and so on, denoting not only velocity but also efficiency. More, the special verb become winged means metaphorically make someone excited. Flightiness, the ability to fly and thus to change one's place quickly, associated also in the great mind with flighty character. In particular, birds were thought to be flighty. Plato's Timaeus present a playful myth of a kind of devolution where women and animals are being born through the degeneration of man. That is, men are transformed in their next life into women or various animals due to their character and deeds in their previous life. Birds in their previous incarnation, according to Timaeus, were men who were not actually bad, but light-minded and simple. In Aristophanes' birds, the chorus is certainly described being too gullible and too easily persuaded by Peisetheros, too ready to accept his plans. The chorus even refers to its own simple-mindedness a few times. But then there are also references to the power of birds over human, also in real life. Flocks of birds can ruin the crop of humans either by simply eating up or not killing the best animals like cicadas. Serried qualities of cats and birds are thus a kind of unexpectedness and non-humanity. Birds are described even to bloodthirsty and violent. The bird army which attacks Peisetheros and Euripides is ready to turn them to pieces. The bird phobia expressed by these two Athenians is nearly as palpable as in Alfred Hitchcock's Birds. However, the fear and disbelief are mutual. The chorus presents the birds' point of view by showing their fear and hate against humans. Besides the bird's eye weave, the human world seen from above, the chorus also interprets human world from the non-human point of view. For them, Athens is an exotic place and men look like trees because they are tall and erect. Both the chorus and Peisetheros refer to the tortures and humiliation of birds in the hands of humans. These passages show what it is to be an object of hunting, trapping, and selling. But then at the end of the play, Peisetheros himself is preparing a meal of birds and using much the same methods of roasting and seasoning, which he described earlier as humiliating for the birds. Peisetheros tells that he is roasting birds which tried to instigate a revolt against the new order and which has now been executed and cooked down as a punishment. Because Peisetheros himself is a kind of semi-bird now, this is the end of the play, with wings and feathers, we may wonder, is this an act of cannibalism or a mark of his new life as a bird, as a raptor bird who eats other birds, or that notwithstanding of the change in his outer form, he is still a man who eats birds. The meal became even more macabre when it turns up to be a wedding feast, namely based on Peisetheros' own. This is an odd reversal for Theros' description at the beginning of the play of the blissful life of birds with its vegetarian diet, which Theros compares with the life of newly wedded couple. Another macabre aspect, at least for the modern reader, is the sexist remarks which Stereo's wife, Procne, a nightingale, gets from Peisetheros and his companion, Eurypides, when the men are still in their human form. The rival language is in accordance with the transgressive convention of the old Attic comedy, but the object of human sexual attraction is in this case, however, a bird. In order to elaborate further the playing with the boundaries between birds and humans, it is time to say something about Tereos the mythical, but I'm concluding. How much time I have?
You've got about 5 minutes.
5 minutes, okay, fine. Say something about Tereos the mythical king of the barbarous land who married Procne, the daughter of the king of Athens, and then raped Procne's sister. As revenge, Procne killed their son Idius and served him as a meal to her husband, to Tereos. When Tereos tries to kill both sisters, a deity transforms them as a rescue into birds, Procne into a nightingale. Tereos himself is transformed into a hoopoe as a punishment. So this Tereos character in the play is a real character in this meaning, that he is a mythical character. Peisetheros is a fictional character. Aristophanes pictures this mythical character, this villain, this rapist, in a very favorable light. As a friend of both birds and of humans, Tereos is a species crosser, having a human mind in bird's body, and he functions as a mediator and conciliator between birds and humans, or birds and Peisetheros. Thus, as a human, Tereos was a villain, but transformed into a bird or a man-bird, he became also morally better. Tereos is a sympathetic character, contrary to Peisetheros, who experienced only a semi-metamorphosis of a kind, only feathers and wings. In order to persuade and convince the bird, Peisetheros had to draw closer to them, obtain these wings and feathers. However, he doesn't become a bird proper or human in bird's body like Tereos. He only gets feathers and wings with which he nevertheless never fly. But what is the basic bodily image of birds in Greek imagination? What it is to be a bird for Greeks? The Greeks didn't have aeroplanes or serious attempts to build flying machines, and although they have some beautiful poems of flying birds, they have quite few myths of human attempting to fly. The Greeks equated wings and wingedness as said with effective velocity and therefore potency, but feathered wings were not the sole possession of birds. Many hybrid creatures and deities like Pegasus and Sirens, and metaphorically, for instance, birds, as I said, have feathered wings. Moreover, although Aristotle writes that wings, like feet, are faculties of locomotion, he noticed that, I quote, "No creature is able only to move by flying, as the fish is able only to swim," end quote. Flying is thus seen as a surplus, even for birds. The basic form of locomotion is on foot. Both Plato and Aristotle noted the two-footedness which connected birds, humans, and we should add to the anthropomorphized gods. In contrast to the four-footed animals, there were those rare ones which have only two. Although Peisetheros is a feathered winged biped, he is not a bird, but in borrowed feathers and introduced, among other things, the institution of blood sacrifice and in the end the absolute autocracy in the society of birds. Although Peisetheros functioned as a mouthpiece for birds, he always furthers, contrary to Tereos, only his own ends by effective persuasion. His metamorphosis into bird is incomplete, and therefore he cannot receive the voice of birds. But did the Greek audience identify with Peisetheros and approve of his expansive dreams of power and their fulfillment? And what about the author, Aristophanes? My reading of the bird suggests that Aristophanes, if only subconsciously, try to understand what it is to be a bird, what it is to be in bird's body, what it is to be be the third party. Thank you for your attention.